everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Vegan Proteins Muscles by Brussels Radio. My name is Danny.
And I'm Giacomo.
And this is our 58th episode. So we're recording multiple podcasts in one day today, and we have spent the last half an hour trying to figure out what the heck was making that sound in our audio recordings, because we have now recorded on multiple different mics and we can't figure out what the heck is wrong. We'll record something and it will sound fine, and then we'll record a whole episode and it'll have that wavy sound in the background. So we start Googling around, like, maybe it's the radio that's in the room. Maybe something is interfering, and I have a record player in my office and it's got a radio on it. Maybe it's that. I take the record player and the radio out of the room, still does it. Maybe it's the router. We don't know. We're in a different room now, and God help us.
Wait a minute. What's the name of that ghost that follows you around that you told me about? And I didn't believe it. I really didn't. And I would, you know, this is anecdotal and a little out there, but it seems to me like Dennis just keeps on trying to prove to us that they do exist. Yeah.
And if anybody thinks that my ghost named Dennis is a reference to Angel and Cordelia's ghosts that follow her around, it's actually not. Dennis has been following me around since before Angel even came on the air. That is completely coincidental. Moving on.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Dennis, we love you. Please stop interrupting our podcast.
Okay. What are we talking about today?
Besides ghosts and goblins.
And being really sweaty in this house and not being able to run a fan or an air conditioner, because that too will make our podcast sound like trash.
Hooray for quarantine life. I don't know. More of like Groundhog Day. Today is like tomorrow and like every other day.
Well, this won't come out for 3 weeks, so maybe the world will be different by then.
Probably not. Yeah, and you know, even though this feels like Groundhog's Day every day for us as well, it isn't too much different than other days, and I find that my friends are saying the same things, but it is, like, come on, like, can we get out of the house? And, you know, and I hate to complain.
Yeah, I was saying this to Giacomo at dinner last night. It feels like I'm living the same day over and over and over, and it's not the worst day. There are definitely worse days that I could be living over and over and over, but it is still the same day over and over and over.
Moving on.
What are we talking about today, Giacomo?
Stress and the impacts of it on the gains. When it comes to the pursuit of being a peak performing athlete, or basically chasing the gains, you know, you got the swoliosis, you got the bug, you got the itch, you're going to keep going and chase that dream to continue to have more and more muscle over time and be a healthy, fit athlete. Basically, I think we wind up hyper-focusing on treating ourselves like a machine and saying, okay, well, if I just train intelligently and if I just continue to progressively overload, I'll be able to handle and adapt to more and more training over time. Hence gains. Like, I'll continue to recover and perform and adapt to whatever, right? Like, you're a machine. And I think that that thinking is quite flawed. And dare I use the word holistic, but I think it's important to realize that stress doesn't just come from training. Stress comes from your lifestyle, and it has a monumental effect on how much training stress you're able to handle. The body doesn't see it any differently. You know, whether you're working out and breaking down and needing to repair, or whether you're dealing with some sort of psychological stress from your workload or from whatever in your personal life or being quarantined, your body views it all the same. Good stress, bad stress, your body doesn't know the difference.
Okay, so let's back up. Giacomo has this habit of doing an entire massive topic in about three sentences, and I'm just like, okay, way to pace ourselves here. So, what is stress? So first, let's talk about what it actually is.
Well, basically, stress can be physical, stress can be mental, stress can be emotional. It doesn't matter where it's coming from, whether it's your environment or from work or from training. Basically, it is some sort of a strain or tension on your ability to regulate your body's internal mechanisms to be a healthy, person.
So some of the things that stress can come from is training, like Giacomo mentioned. It can also come from things like work. It can come from things like family or relationships. It can come from things like being sick. That's a stress on your body, or an injury is a stress on your body. It can also come from things like lack of sleep. It can come from things like being hungover. And then it can also come from good things, good stress, a promotion at work, a big move to your new dream location. That's all great stuff. It's still stress. It's something where you need to sort of rise to the occasion in order to get through it.
Exactly. And quite frequently, when we look at our ability to be healthier athletes over time, I think we tend to miss the mark over here and we just focus on training. How can we train better? How can we train smarter? How can we train harder? You know, and why are we not progressing? And more often than not, it has nothing to do with your training. It has to do with basically you not adjusting your programming to meet the demands of your lifestyle, or
vice versa.
Or not even recognizing them, because there's ways to manage your stress too.
Well, I mean, just to take a step away from this for a second and think about why are people constantly just beating themselves into the ground. We live in a hustle culture. I don't know if you guys have noticed it, but hustle culture is everywhere. This whole, I'll sleep when I'm dead, I'm gonna work myself to the bone. The fact that somebody out there might be working harder than you should be motivation enough. Etc., etc., so forth. I can't roll my eyes hard enough at this type of stuff because, I mean, it might work in the short term and it might work when you're 19 and 20 years old, but guess what? It is not gonna work forever, and eventually you're gonna be so hurt and so sick and so run down, you're gonna be out of the game.
Call it burnout.
Completely. Yeah. You're gonna burn out, you're gonna hurt yourself. It's so obnoxious. And this isn't just about training. I mean, it's about like everything. Hustle culture is everywhere. Work, hustle, grind, like knock it off. Like tell yourself whatever you need to tell yourself to motivate yourself, but like also maybe get over yourself a little bit. It's a fine line. It's a fine line between how hard to push and when to pull back. And like everything else, it is not so black and white. There are so many factors involved that you need to just kind of try to take a mature approach to it if you can.
Which beckons the question, what does stress do? How does it impact your training, essentially? How does it impact your ability to recover and perform?
Well, I'm glad you asked. So at its basic level, stress increases cortisol in your body, and we've all heard about cortisol and why it's so bad for us, but what is it there for? Well, it's a stress hormone, obviously. It also is kind of similar to adrenaline in a way, in that it's like a fight or flight type of hormone where it gives you a quick increase of energy, it increases your heart rate to help you get through a problem. That's the point. But like anything else, like when you drink a lot of caffeine, eventually you crash. If you have this big surge of cortisol or even adrenaline, eventually you're gonna crash.
You gotta pay it back.
You have to pay it back. So if you're constantly putting the pedal to the metal all the time, you're not going to be able to. So you mentioned recovery. And in 2014, the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research basically did a subject where they had people self-report their perceived energy, their perceived fatigue, their perceived recovery. And what they found was obviously perceived stress, which is what they were basically self-reporting, was strongly linked to recovery. And it didn't just happen. It didn't happen slowly. The impact on someone's recovery from training only took as little as 4 days of being at a higher perceived level of stress. 4 days of higher stress and your recovery is impeded.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at some other studies as well. And, you know, just basically, they took one subject group who reported higher psychological stresses in their life, and another subject group that reported lower perceived psychological stresses. And the group that reported lower stresses, basically, they were able to recover in as little as 48 hours after workout, where the other group, who was basically saying, hey, I'm more stressed out right now in general in my life, it was taking them as long as 96 hours to recover from their workout.
Which is what? How many days? 4 days?
Difference of 2 days. So twice as long to recover.
So twice as long. I mean, that's a big difference. If you want to talk about The fact that someone else out there is working harder than you should be motivation enough. The fact that someone else out there is recovering twice as fast as you should be motivation enough. You know?
Yeah, and so you can just basically burn the candle at both ends and think you're doing yourself justice, but you're really doing yourself a disservice. Because you have, if you don't recover from your stress and you don't give yourself a chance to adapt to the stresses in your life, then you're constantly going to be basically chasing your tail and just thinking you're getting more accomplished than you actually are.
But I don't think we need studies to prove this necessarily. I think all of us can probably recall a time in our life where we were really stressed out and our training sucked. Like, anybody can't? I would be surprised. Most people can. But what I think is harder to put your finger on specifically, because like we just said, there's a very quick cause and effect with the recovery. Body composition. That higher stress plays a pretty big role in your body composition, which is like how much muscle you carry and how much body fat you carry. And it ain't pretty. And it's interesting to me because if I think about this from an evolutionary standpoint, I would think more stressed out people would need to be stronger and leaner to overcome whatever is like coming for them. But apparently that's not the way it plays out. So in 1964, there were researchers who tested out subjects by giving them cortisol, either via IV or through pills.
Sign me up for that.
Yeah, no, thank you. But anyway, what they found is that the combination of inactivity and cortisol, high cortisol that they literally ingested, led to a decrease in lean body mass. You might be like, Danny, yeah, inactivity, duh. If you're not lifting, if you're not training, decrease in lean body mass. But it was much more significant of a decrease in lean body mass than the group that just didn't train. So it's not just inactivity, the cortisol made it much worse. So now, picture this, let's put this in a real life scenario where something super stressful is going on in your life and therefore you cannot train, right? This is how it goes. You have a crazy ass work project, guess you're gonna miss a few days at the gym. Mm. So now your cortisol is higher and you're inactive. That's like a super decrease in lean body mass.
Yeah.
That's stressing you out just to hear it. I can see it on your face.
Well, yeah, because both, in my opinion, the answer isn't all or none. In my opinion, the answer is to mitigate the amount of training that you're doing and be responsible about it. Don't try to maybe train 2 hours a day, 6 days a week, when you should be training, say, 45 to 60 minutes a day, 3 to 4 times a week. I think it just makes sense to adjust your training in order to get the best output possible so that you can consistently make progress over time and just build up more volume over time, as opposed to thinking of, you know, just needing to build up more volume every single month, month after month, year after year. It's just not practical. No one lives like that.
So as if your lean body mass decreasing isn't fun enough, there's also a lot, and this is probably what most people have heard first and foremost, is that increased cortisol leads to increased fat storage, right? We've all heard that, but it's actually very, very true. So one of the first studies, it's actually an animal study, not too psyched about that, but in 2009, Wake Forest University School of Medicine studied a group of female apes. And apes, as many of you probably know, like kind of organize themselves into a hierarchy. They're people sort of at the top of the pack and at the bottom of the pack. And the female apes at the bottom of the pack are the ones who get like harassed and bullied more. They're just more stressed out because of their sort of place on the totem pole there. And what they found was that they had significantly higher body fat storages. And not only that, but it was visceral fat, which is the most dangerous type of fat, as opposed to like subcutaneous fat. The visceral fat is around the organs. And that's the one most associated with like heart disease and high blood pressure and all these other sort of health ailments. So simply from being more stressed out, even though they were in the same environment and likely had access to the same food, probably even less food because they were lower on the totem pole, they still had higher body fat storages and it was visceral fat. But that is an animal study. There's a human study in 2000, the University of California Health and Psychology Program did a study to assess women that had more belly fat, and they found that they consistently displayed higher cortisol reactivity than the women who did not have higher belly fat. Belly fat, again, being the more dangerous fat So what this higher cortisol reactivity means, and this is super friggin' important to wrap your head around, this becomes a spiral. Your higher stress causes higher visceral fat storage, which causes higher stress, which causes higher visceral fat storage. Like, I'm not even talking about like, oh, you gained belly fat, so mentally you're stressed. I mean, physically having more belly fat stresses your body out, thus increasing cortisol, thus increasing the visceral fat storage. Stress is terrible for your body composition. There have been times that just anecdotally in my own life where I'm doing everything exactly the same. I'm doing the same training program. I'm doing the same macros. I'm doing everything and I'm taking my pictures week to week and I can literally watch myself look shittier and shittier, even though all factors on paper appear to be the same. And I know that it's because I'm going through something really stressful. And that's it. That alone is enough to change the entire way that my physique looks, which is also why a lot of physique athletes look their worst on show day, right? Because that's when their body's the most stressed out. And then like a week or two later, they actually look like on point because they've decreased so much of their stress.
It's an interesting point because most people usually chalk that up to not carb loading the right way or just manipulating water when they should or shouldn't have. But yeah, very good point. I didn't think about that.
It's a lot of factors, but that's absolutely one of them. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, you had something interesting to say about insulin. Go ahead.
I also wanted to say that regardless of cortisol's impact on your body, with all variables being equal as far as what actions you're taking with your nutrition and training, that it also does wind up giving you a propensity to want to eat more. So it's almost as like you're setting yourself up to be even more stressed out because you're stressed and inevitably sometimes winding up overeating. Basically, your insulin spikes, your blood sugar drops, and because of that fight or flight response that's been triggered, your brain is under duress circumstances, which means your body thinks that it's eaten calories and that you need to eat more calories. So you wind up being more hungry just because of the fact that you're stressed out.
Well, and then there's also the fact that we can all, I don't know a single human being who has never felt that feeling of, I'm really stressed out, I just want to eat a box of cookies right now. Mm-hmm. So you're really stressed out by external factors. You decide that in order to make yourself feel better, you're going to eat a whole bunch of crap, probably go way past your, you know, caloric or macro goals or what have you. So one, you're probably going to increase your fat gain just by overeating in the first place, regardless of what it is. But two, if you're eating something that is just not healthy, not good for you, that also stresses out your body to eat a lot of junk food all at once like that. So what happens? Your cortisol goes up and you get more stressed out. You see how all of this can just become a super vicious cycle. It's a circle.
I'm gesticulating over here. You can't see that, but...
And then you can also see how it comes over into sleep as well. So we can all agree most people are not getting enough sleep in the first place, but chronic stress and chronic elevated cortisol can make it worse. So there was a study in 1997 by the University of Chicago's Department of Medicine that was trying to find like the relationship between sleep loss and high cortisol levels. And long story short, the study concluded that when your body doesn't get enough sleep, your cortisol levels can rise anywhere from 37 to 45%, which can accelerate the development of metabolic consequences, cognitive consequences. And we all know that when you don't get enough sleep, you suck at your job the next day. That's stressful. You suck at eating well the next day. That's stressful. You're probably cranky AF with your partner. That's stressful. Stress is absolutely insane. So the idea that when people are not getting the physique results or weight loss results or strength gain results or muscle gain results, the first thing that they look at is their training or, you know, what do I need to do to change my macros? And the fact that the first thing is not, okay, let me really consider where all the stress is coming from and where can I decrease it? That should be step number one, because the ripple effects of chronic stress are mind-blowing, actually.
And to not to dumb things down a little bit, but just to simplify and use a real world practical example, this is why when it comes to our clients who are dieting, especially the extreme dieters, the preppers, the competition preppers, there used to be the approach where we just go harder and harder and just diet them down and starve them, because it's essentially what needs to happen at the end of the rope when they get to the competition season, just starve them and just throw cardio at them. But if they're not getting any sort of a break from the stress, their body is gonna look like shit even if it does cooperate, and it may not cooperate. And no matter how much you throw at your body, what happens if you have a body that doesn't cooperate and looks like shit on top of it at the end? So basically, this is why we incorporate diet breaks. It's a break from the stress of dieting. It's a break from the stress of not being able to be recovered from your training. And it's a little bit of a break from the stress in your world when you have less to do. Dieting is stressful. And this is why sometimes we tell our clients to like pull back on their steps, for example, and they look at us like, or cardio, like pull back on your activity and eat a little more. Take a little bit of a break and take a deload from your training. And they're like, what? Like, I have a show in 8 weeks from now. I'm like, yeah. And do you want to see results? Well, we have to take this period of time and clear out some of that stress because it's just too much and your body won't cooperate. And then lo and behold, what happens week of, they wind up, even with the extra food, they wind up seeing their body start to cooperate. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's hard to not fire on all cylinders, and you'll be afraid that you can't shift to that next gear the week after. But honestly, it's the best thing for you to do that.
There's a time and a place. Like, there's a time and a place to kick it up to the next gear, and there's a time to take a step back. And knowing when to do what, it's confusing. It's overwhelming. We get it. But it's definitely, the answer is not always, how can I push harder? Because it can backfire on you in so many ways. And I'd rather see someone take baby steps towards their goals, because you will get there eventually, even taking small steps consistently, much faster and much more efficiently than someone who takes giant steps and burns out and abandons the goal completely. I know this is like a very science-heavy episode, but it's so important because we exclude so much of the rest of our life when it comes to our training and our nutrition and our fitness life, if you will. Our fitness life and our regular life are very much enmeshed. And without realizing that, especially as you get older, like I said kind of at the beginning, you can get away with a lot of really dumb shit in your teens and early 20s. And I know because I did.
And keyword get away, though.
Yeah, you're getting away with it. You're getting away with it. You're doing all right in spite of it.
Exactly.
You could be doing much better.
There you go.
But as you get older, you're not playing any tricks on your body anymore. It's not going to put up with anything. I've seen that in myself. Giacomo has seen it in himself. We see it in our clients. We hear it in so many stories. Like, man, I used to be able to just do blah, blah, blah. And now, like, it's just not happening anymore. And a lot of it is because, you know, we weren't paying attention to the important things that were causing all this stress before. And it's just, it catches up with you. Sometimes very quickly, sometimes very slowly, but so what can we do to reduce our stress? Here's the huge question, right? No, you guys really answer. I need to know. Just kidding. Okay, we're going to help you and tell you just some things that you can do that maybe you haven't already thought of. We get it. Meditation, yoga, you've heard it all before. Let's talk about some other things you can do to alleviate your stress in terms of like producing the most results for your health and fitness.
I think sleep hygiene is pretty fucking crucial, especially right now where we don't necessarily have a way to decompress from the day because our environment has changed so much, because there's so much crappity crap to process going on in the world right now, like even more than normal, and we're all going through it together. I think sleep hygiene is paramount to your health, and it's like right there with being hydrated. Hydration and sleep, basically. So set aside a certain time and try to honor it every single night where you're going to just basically clear out your thoughts, decompress, and maybe just like chill with the blue lights, maybe not look at your phone, just some sort of things to basically tell your brain and your body it's time for sleep. And then maybe like a half an hour to an hour later, get in bed and eventually lights out. And you have like a steady circadian rhythm, a steady sleep cycle day in and day out. Sleep hygiene, super duper important.
That was my number one thing also, was sleep, I think is tremendously overlooked. And I think of all the things, save maybe meditation. Meditation seems to have a lot of really good research behind it, but yeah, I mean, I personally, it's not for me, not the traditional meditation anyway. But if you're able to do that, that's up there. But you know, we all sleep. And I think if you can focus on that first, you will get the most bang for your buck. You will get results very quickly if you're able to increase that. And one of the things that not a lot of people think of is, let's say you go to bed at 11 and you wake up at 7 every night, right? Like you're in bed at 11, up at 7. You say, hey, Danny, I get 8 hours of sleep. Yeah, probably not, actually. Because there's the time that you're falling asleep. So now maybe we're down to 7.5 hours. Then there's all the times that you are awake throughout the night that you don't even realize it. And that can get you down to like 6 hours and 45 minutes. So you think you got 8 hours, but you didn't even get close to that. And that's why I have some clients who are like, Danny, I like need to be in bed like 9.5 hours a night. Is that normal? And I'm like, that's phenomenal. If you can do that, that is awesome. Giacomo was giving me dirty looks because he needs so much less sleep than I do.
I don't know about all that. I don't know. I think we...
yep.
Maybe about an hour. I'd say half an hour to an hour less sleep a night than you. But I still try to sleep as much as I possibly can. And I'm pretty... I don't know that my schedule is quite as good as yours as far as my sleep hygiene goes. But I do recognize its importance. You know, I definitely make a concerted effort to not look at my phone in bed. I do things to make sure that I can get to bed, remind my body that it's time to go to sleep, like, you know, brushing my teeth and not working before I go to bed, not eating before I go to bed, you know, stuff like that, just basically to remind myself that it's time to wind down and go to sleep.
And a lot of people do have sleep disturbances that are kind of out of their control, but if there's anything you can take into your control, you should. I do read on my phone a lot at night, but I either wear blue blocking glasses, or you can actually kind of turn the blue light off on your phone. I set it to the dimmest setting possible. To try and keep that light out of my eyes. If you're somebody who wakes up like at 4 a.m, like a lot of people I know do, not because they have to, just because they do, trying to squeeze in a nap in the afternoon is really going to help you decrease that stress. And as we're going through this quarantine situation, I mean, a lot of people do have a lot more time on their hands. And you would think that they would be trying to get more sleep because of it. But what I've actually found is most people's sleep cycle is even more screwed up right now, because they don't have to be up at a specific time to get in the office and deal with traffic. So their sleep cycle is more erratic and it's hurting them.
And you did touch upon meditation and mention.
Go ahead, Giacomo, this is your thing.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's my thing only. I don't necessarily want to say that I want to push it on you, Danny, but I think that you should give it another go.
Are you challenging me on the air?
I don't know that I'm challenging you, but I don't know that, put it this way, there is, I don't know how the saying went, but the two people who got me into practicing mindfulness told me that the harder it is to meditate and sit with myself and accept like stillness, awareness, just being okay with nothing but my thoughts and my emotions, the harder it is to do that, the more that I need to practice mindfulness. And I know that's kind of a little wishy-washy and spiritual, but I've found that the more that I persist with it, the better it gets. And there was definitely a hump in the beginning when I practiced mindfulness where it just seemed forced and uncomfortable. And over time, I have genuinely found that it has made a dramatic difference in my ability to be less reactive during the day, no matter what the stressors are, whether they're ones that I brought upon myself or whether they were ones that fell into my lap. I've found that mindfulness has been life-changing for me.
Well, I'll challenge you back.
Sure.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I should probably try it again. But mindfulness is not the same thing as meditation, and mindfulness can be practiced without, like, sitting on a pillow and, you know, focusing on your breath. Mindfulness can be practiced doing all kinds of things. So I would recommend certainly try meditation because there is a lot of research behind it, but you can practice mindfulness while you're eating. You can practice mindfulness while you're walking. You could practice mindfulness while you garden or paint or crochet or whatever it is you're doing. You can practice mindfulness, and I think that's a worthwhile endeavor regardless of what you're doing.
100%. Or like while you're putting a baby to sleep, for example. You know, I used to do that when we were with our niece and our nephew. Because let's face it, sometimes you just don't have the time to self-care and you're in the middle of doing things. So I like playing to your point because part of the issue I take with our message is sometimes I feel like it can only speak to the privileged who actually have the time to take care of themselves and mm-hmm. the resources. And quite frankly, sometimes the stresses are so great that you're not fucking Superman or Superwoman or superhero at all. And you just don't have the time. You have the know-how, but you don't have the time to do it. And so like practicing that mindfulness throughout the day while you're working through the stress of your life can also be very helpful.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. A lot of these, I understand that in order to do a lot of these things, you do have to have the privilege to be able to do them, whether it's the time, the resources, or the money. But I still think it's important to hear because I don't think there's one way to do anything. And I think there's ways to incorporate a lot of these tips into your life almost regardless of what your situation is. Another tried and true way to decrease stress is to be active. Now, we're talking to people who love to lift the iron, right? But that's not what I'm talking about specifically. That can do it as long as it's not too heavy or too intense. Once you cross a certain threshold, that's just more stress. But some other things that might not be stressful would be like low intensity cardio. And by that, I mean like walking, slow biking, hiking, as long as it's not like right up the side of a mountain or something, dancing, swimming, just moving your body in a way that feels like good and mostly gentle for you.
So like cardio is not going to kill my gains?
Not low. I mean, running will certainly kill your gains, but running would certainly not be what I consider low intensity cardio.
Yeah. And I guess my point is like, if your activity is active recovery, or even like low intensity steady state cardio, if it's helping your stress, honestly, it could probably be helping your gains.
Another scientific, all right guys, I'm throwing this one at Giacomo. See, we don't actually make these podcasts for you. We just make these podcasts to tell each other what to do. Another scientifically backed way to reduce your stress is to laugh more. And this is pretty easy to do. There's so many ways to do it. As long as you have some semblance of a sense of humor.
The joke?
Whether it's like chilling at the end of the night, watching a sitcom that makes you laugh, or I love to watch or listen to stand-up comedy. Listen, you can find me walking down the street laughing to myself like a maniac pretty frequently, you know, with earbuds in also, so people can't even see I'm listening to something, so they just really do think I'm nuts. It just being silly. I mean, you can literally even just force yourself to laugh. Have you ever played the haha game?
Haha, Danny.
No.
So what do you mean?
So it's been a long time. You like get people together, you lie around in a circle, and I think you put your head on the person next to you's stomach. So you're in a circle with everybody's head on the next person's belly and one person just starts laughing. Just, you know, not at anything. They just deliberately start laughing and eventually everybody is absolutely cracking up because your head gets like jostled all around and it's whatever. I don't care what you're laughing at. Laughing really does reduce your stress and reduce your cortisol level. And sometimes we just take our shit way more seriously than we need to. I don't think anybody is quite as guilty of that as myself. Sometimes I just take stuff way too seriously that doesn't need to be. And I need to remind myself, like, you know, we're specks on a floating rock in the universe and nothing matters. And that's pretty funny. And laugh about it. So go ahead and find something funny and laugh.
For real. And we're going to keep coming back to this. Nutrition, you know, make sure that you're getting in a variety of vitamins and minerals and antioxidants, a variety of phytonutrients, basically your micronutrients from fresh whole foods, ideally, you know. Pop a multivitamin for insurance, if you will, but like ultimately get in some fruits, get in some vegetables, eat healthy foods, because all of those nutrients are going to help support creating an anti-inflammatory effect in your system. And regardless of the stress, whether it's from training, lifestyle, and everything in between, you're going to have an easier time recovering from it when you are nutritionally sound.
The last thing that I'm going to recommend, and this is a really big one, and it's not one step you can take, but it would just be if you are chronically stressed out to the max, reassess your life. Stop and take an inventory of everything that is stressing you out, your living situation, the people that you are surrounding yourselves with, your work environment, your training, your habits. Are you going out and binge drinking two nights a week and like casually smoking while you're out doing so? Maybe check that out. What you're eating. Assess everything in your life. And I'm not saying that you can pull a 180 on your life, nor should you. That never works, right? It's all about changing little things at a time. But you can't change anything until you're aware of it. So bringing awareness to the things that may be causing you this stress is the first step towards being able to improve it.
And I'll throw out a little positivity to end with, because I kind of like that stuff. When you become aware of your life by reassessing it, and you realize what your stresses are, it might seem defeating, and it's probably going to feel really crumb-bummy in the moment when you're like, wow, how did I get here? And look at all this. But I would encourage you to not be negative about it and be more matter of fact and deal with the hurt in the moment. It's not going to feel good in the moment to take a look at all the things that you can control and to be able to check yourself in your life. However, it is the only way to make a change long term that will ultimately serve you on your journey. So yeah, for what it's worth, like, we don't necessarily have to feel good in the moment about something, but if we're aware of what we can do, and that's the first step towards making changes, eventually we can persist and we can make changes and things will ultimately get better, and you'll have long-term, sustainable, balanced health and be able to reach your goals.
Moving on to our question and answer segment, I have a question from Instagram. GM Cado Estuff. I am so sorry. Wait. JMCA Does Stuff. I think that's it. Okay. Question from Instagram. JMCA Does Stuff. I hope that's what this says. It says, how would you structure your training if you had to work a night shift?
Me personally, I think that I would train probably within 2 to 4 hours of wake, maybe about 4 hours of waking up, because you're probably going to feel a little groggy. And maybe it's not necessarily natural to be awake and working at night, but hey, that's what the job calls for, and you need to be there for your career. But that being said, I think there's ways around it. I'd say rather than waking up and training right away, or rather than like training right before you go to work, where it might affect your ability to be focused and be energetic at your job, I think if you maybe wake up, recharge a little bit, balance stuff out during the day, 4 hours later, after you wake up, that would be my response. The next question is from Happy in Your Health on Instagram. I drink a lot of cashew milk. I'm interested in getting an almond cow machine. How do I track?
Okay, so I don't have an almond cow machine. I've looked at them. I think they're pretty cool, but I don't know how to actually use it. There are certain foods that are just more difficult to track, and things like homemade almond milk, homemade soy milk, cashew milk, kombucha, homebrewed beer, as I found out, a lot of things like that can be more challenging to track. So here is what I would do with the almond cow machine, whether you're making nut milk or soy milk, it would all be the same. Weigh how much water you're adding to it. So let's say it's a liter, right? So 1,000 milliliters of water that you put in. And I don't know how much nut it requires you to use, but let's say it's a cup, which would be about 120 grams of nuts, right? But that does not all end up in the milk. Most of it is strained out. So what you would have to do is, you know, you started with 1,000 milliliters of water. Maybe when you're done, you have 1,020 milliliters of water, which means your whole container is 1,000 milliliters of water and 20 milliliters of cashew. That is what I would plug the recipe in as. And that would work for soybeans. That would work for almond milk. That would work for coconut milk. It wouldn't matter what it was. Whatever the difference in the liquid from when you start to when you finish is how much of the ingredient is actually in it.
And I'm saying to myself, like, use both and take the what would otherwise be waste and make something out of it.
Oh, yeah, you totally should make. I mean, I'm sure that's the point. Like, yeah, you would make something out of whatever is left over. But still, if you wanted the macros in the milk itself, that is how I would track it. And if you do get one, let me know how you like it, because I have been looking at it, but I've also been banned from buying more kitchen gadgets.
Don't tempt her, people. All right, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Vegan Proteins Muscles by Brussels Radio. We love to hear your feedback. You can catch us on Facebook, on Instagram, on YouTube at Vegan Proteins and at Muscles by Brussels. You can shoot us an email with any feedback you have, any questions you have, anything you want us to talk about. We love hearing from you. Once again, my name is Giacomo.
And I'm Danny.
And we'll talk to you soon.